black, proud, independent, determined, educated, resilient, compassionate, batty, funny, quirky, unique, creative, thoughtful, sincere, loyal, gutsy, vibrant, resourceful, imaginative, engaging, fabulous, awesome. Those are all words that describe me, the Brick City Brown Chick. Welcome to my podcast, What I Know Now. Thanks for listening.
Turn and face the strange changes. Look out now, you rock and rollers. Changes. You're gonna get older now. Changes. Time may change me, but I can't trace time. Welcome back, everyone, to What I Know Now. This is episode 21, Changes. This episode is about why I currently have mostly purple hair. I did this hairstyle for my mother's 90th birthday party, which we had a couple of weeks ago. So this episode, I'm going to discuss my relationship with my mother and her siblings and what I learned by throwing this party. If you are a black child of Southern parents, or even just one, a Southern parent, you understand that they communicate a little differently with their children. A couple of weeks after Thanksgiving last year, my mother said the following: I would really like to have a 90th birthday party. Okay, I think in most families, that statement would be interpreted as, oh, okay, well, what are you going to do? When are we going to do it? That kind of thing. How that's interpreted from a Southern black parent is, child, you will be throwing me a 90th birthday party. And I've had a few of my white friends say, okay, but the party was her idea, so why wasn't she throwing it? Because that's not how it works. And because I am an only child, there is no village. There is no group of people I can turn to and say, hey, we're throwing mom a birthday party. I need you to do X. I need you to do Y. I need you to do Z. No such people. So it came down to my husband and me, myself, and I. So that's how this all began. My mother's actual birthday is not until September. However, as I told her, my husband and I will be celebrating our 25th wedding anniversary this year, which is actually in October, and there was no way I could pull this party off in September, and then he and I turn around and go away in October. And oh yeah, there was one other thing. A friend of mine was getting married in August, and I was the day of wedding coordinator. So there was absolutely no way that was going to work. So I told her the party would need to be in the spring, and she was fine with that. I have planned lots of parties in my lifetime. A friend of mine calls me the party planner extraordinaire. I have had tons of parties at my house, at venues. This is not new to me. I can do it on the turn of a dime. But when you're dealing with people who make things difficult, it kind of stretches your patience. My mother lives in North Carolina, and the Deep South, well, I won't say that. I will say North Carolina has a very specific way of doing things, and a lot of it is just totally nonsensical. So in the beginnings of my search for a venue to have this party, I looked for places that could host about 50 people and would serve food, and so I didn't have to worry about having a separate caterer. Okay, that is rare and few and far between, even though my mother lives in the state capital. I understand that parts of North Carolina are rural and you can't have an expectation like that, but this is the state capital. I requested what I consider very simple accommodations that people on the other end of the phone acted like they had never heard in their entire life. A prime example was several vendors requested that I physically come see their venue before I booked. Even though I explained at the very beginning of our conversation that I lived in Maryland and there was no way for me to just drop on into Raleigh and look at a venue. A couple of people flat out refused to rent the venue to me for that reason, because I couldn't just show up. They asked me if I had cousins or friends in the area that could do it for me. I said, absolutely not. Most of the people coming to this party are over 70. These are not people that just jump in their cars and go places. So that blew my mind because I'd never run into that before. One place was willing to rent me the space, but they still needed me to see it. I was having a conversation with a woman over Facebook. We were on FaceTime and Facebook. So I had to walk her through how to use the flip version of her phone to turn the camera the other way so that I could see the room she was in. She said, "Ooh, I learned something new today. I didn't know you could do that." It was really mind-blowing trying to find a space for this party of mostly elderly people. Lots of places wanted an alcohol deposit of several hundred dollars. And I again reiterated that most of the people would be over 70, and that even if they had been drinkers at one point in their life, they no longer drank. Therefore, we did not need the alcohol. So why did I need to sign an alcohol waiver? It's just, some days I really did feel like I was an alien speaking a foreign language. It was just incredible. The one event that my husband is still blown away by is one of the function rooms wanted us to pay for day of security. Okay, if that's their rule, that's their rule. Again, I thought this was nonsense because why? But okay. So they explained to us how the security payment would work. The person who would be doing the security would be an off-duty Raleigh police officer, and that we would need to pay him in cash the day of the party. And when I told my husband about that conversation, he was like, So they want us to pay him a bribe? Because that's what it sounded like. He's like, are we supposed to put dollar signs and bribe on the envelope that we give him? So we decided we wanted no part of that, because who the heck knows what's going on with an off-duty police officer working a job that he may or may not have permission to work. So we quickly backed away from that. I finally found a place to have it, and then I could move on to making party favors. I am famous for party favors and gift bags. I think every party I have ever thrown in my life involved party favors and gift bags. It's just how I'm wired. It's just what I do. For this particular party, I thought it would be cool to glitter up wine glasses and put my mother's name on them and the fact that she was turning 90. It sounded good in theory, and it worked out well. Everybody liked the favors. But I can go my entire life without seeing glitter in any form ever again. Once you have glittered more than 50 glasses, you just want to scream and you want the glitter out of your house. It's a couple of months since I finished the favors. There is still glitter in my house. I will still find specks of glitter on the dog or the cat, because it just never goes away. I've vacuumed I don't know how many times. It's just one of those things. The party day came around. People were excited. I'd gone through the RSVP process with people, and we were all good to go. We had a great time at the party. My mother was very happy. One of the things she said that struck me was, I wanted my flowers while I was still here, and I got my flowers. And so in that moment, I got why she wanted to have this party so badly. For people who don't know, the phrase, give people their flowers, means give them their accolades. When people say, we gave her flowers while she was here, it means while she was alive, while she was still with us. People tend to give people their due or their praise or their flowers after they die. At their funeral, and my mother wanted to hear how she had impacted and touched people's lives while she could still hear it. And I totally understood that. So the party came out well. Everybody had a good time. My mother decided, I guess about 3 weeks before the party, that she wanted an after party. Makes her sound 25, right? She wanted an after party at her house, which translated to cake, ice cream, coffee, tea, whatever. So we had about a dozen or so people who came back to the house and ate three different kinds of cake, because we had to make sure we covered all the bases, and had some drinks and had a good time. So that turned out really well. My frustration with the party, besides trying to find somewhere to have it and dealing with people living in their own world, was my family's participation. Now, understand that probably 95% of the people who came to this party were from my mother's side of the family. And my mother is the oldest of 10 kids. Four have passed on, so she has five remaining siblings, two brothers and three sisters. Because she is the oldest and she will be 90, for the most part, they are in their late 70s. To late 80s. That's the age spread. my frustration with one of her sisters was she never would tell me whether yes, she was coming or no, she was not. She lives in Virginia, so it was less of a trip for her than it was for my husband and I, but she's also 25 years older than me, give or take. So that's another thing. But my point was, listen, I don't care one way or the other. I just need to know for purposes of paying by the head count, as you do in parties like this, whether you're coming or not. My mother and her youngest sister, as the kids used to say back in my day, have beef. In other words, they've been arguing for a couple of months now. I didn't really expect my aunt to come, even though she sent back her RSVP that said she was in fact coming. She did not come. So my one uncle was in a nasty accident that nearly took out one of his eyes, literally. So he's not in a condition to be driving right now. And then her other brother was having neuropathy issues with his leg. So a short version of a long story, of her five siblings, one of her sisters showed up. And that was super upsetting to me for a couple of reasons. Number one, that's not the kind of family we are. We always show up for each other regardless. And number two, I just felt really sad for my mother that she has five living siblings and only one decided to come show their face and celebrate her birthday with her. So that really did upset me. But I had to take a step back and remind myself, not my circus, not my monkeys. And if you don't know what that means, it means don't involve yourself in situations that don't involve you. In other words, this is my mother and her relationship with her siblings. And as the daughter and the niece, it's really not my business to get into that. They'll all, you know, work it out or they won't. But it got me thinking about how people change over time. I grew up with these people. These are my aunts and uncles. Their kids are my cousins. I know them well. And it was the first time that I've ever felt like the family felt fractured. And not fractured over a big fight or a big argument or somebody had it out. I mean, my mother and her sister are having it out, but this is not the first time the two of them have had it out. They've made up before. My mother's the oldest. My aunt is next to the youngest. So there is a 20-year age difference between them. So they've only really, I guess, dealt with each other as adults, because by the time my aunt was born, my mother was in college. She was out of the house. So even though it's been 60 years practically, it's taken them a very long time to understand each other and to relate to each other. So I get that part. But to have my other uncles and aunts not be there for their sister was just really hurtful to me. But again, I just had to say, this is not my battle to fight. My mother is a strong woman and a strong personality. And if she feels there was some BS going on behind the scenes, she'll make that real clear to her siblings about how she feels about it. So I wasn't going to get into that. But my mother's side of the family has always been the more supportive side, the more stable side. My father's side of the family is, good word, dysfunctional. And I realize that is a highly overused word. Everybody says everything's dysfunctional and every family's dysfunctional. My father's family took dysfunction to a whole different level. And when I was a kid, I did not understand why we spent so much more time with my mother's family than we did with my father's family. In the summertime, practically every summer, we drove from New Jersey to North Carolina to see my grandparents and to see my mother's siblings who stayed in North Carolina and never left. Whereas we probably only went to Georgia to see my father's family every 2 to 3 years. So it was a very different cadence and connection. And what I learned as I grew up was some of my father's brothers, remember there's like 14 of them, some of my father's brothers who never left Georgia had some resentment toward my father because he did leave. And my father's feeling on the subject was always, okay, you had the same opportunity to leave that I did, and you chose not to. And his brothers felt like their duty was to, like, this is where they were born and raised, and their duty was to stay there and marry women from there and live their lives there. I think one of the major differences, one of the major things that made my father live differently or choose a different path is that he went into the military. He went into the army and he served 2 tours in Korea during the Korean War. And that fundamentally changed him in terms of not being willing to have been treated as less than. You have to remember, my parents came up during Jim Crow in the South. And once my father had been out in the world in the U.S. military, what he said was, you know, I went and fought for this country and I wasn't going to come back and have that country treat me like crap. So going back and living in Georgia and, you know, yes, ma'am, no, sir, living a quiet life in fear was not what I was going to do. And that's why he chose, when he came back to the United States, to leave, to go north, as a lot of Black people of that generation did. That is what my mother did as well. If they both hadn't have done that, they never would have met, because they met in New Jersey after both of them had left their respective southern states. So there was a certain amount of jealousy towards my dad, and my uncles also thought that my mother was, what's the word they used to use? Uppity or cityfied. That was another word I heard a lot as a kid, that I was cityfied because I didn't know how to do the things my cousins who lived in the South did and knew how to do, like shoot guns, for example. And every time we would go, one of my uncles would offer to have his daughter, who was a year older than me, teach me how to shoot. And my father was always like, absolutely not. My 8-year-old, 11-year-old, 13-year-old, you know, as I got older, daughter, it's not going to be shooting guns. We're going to pass on that. So my father's family is just very different. They are, like my mother's family, they are good people. They're just much more country and much more willing to accept the status quo, is what I will say. Whereas my mother's family are more challenging. They're more sort of change maker type folks. So I grew up knowing both sides and understanding both sides, but not really getting why there was so much stress around visiting my father's family. Now, my understanding of that didn't really come until after he was gone. And I really thought about the times we spent with his family and how things were there. They were super independent and not as, I guess, interdependent as my mother's family was. My father's family really kept things close to the vest. There were certain things you didn't talk about. And that's true of all families, I guess, but they were much more in the vein of, oh, we don't talk about that. Oh, that's part of the past. Oh, we don't deal with that. That type of thing. And that wasn't what I was used to, because my parents weren't like that with me for the most part. Now, there were a couple of issues that they were like, okay, we're not doing that. We're not talking about that. Like, you're a child. You're too young to know about that or talk about that. But most things, I could go to my parents with most things, and they just lay it out and tell me what the story was. But that's not how most of my dad's family was. So it made for an interesting childhood. Like I said, we didn't interact with them a lot, but when we did, it always left me going, oh, that's a different way to do things, or oh, that's a different perspective. So I've never looked at my mother's family that way, but her birthday party really did make me have to take a step back and go, you grew up with these people and you know these people a certain way, but time comes for all of us and things change and people change. And what I know now that I didn't put a lot of thought into before this party is how difficult aging is. And I think that's hard for people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s to really get that as you age, everybody you've ever known ages as well. And I have noticed that probably in the last 10 years with my mother specifically. My mother was always bright-eyed and vibrant and go, go, go. That's just who she was. And the last 10 years of her life have really slowed her down, which you would expect. Going between 80 and 90, you expect that. So she doesn't go as much as she used to. She doesn't have the desire to be out of the house as much as she did. My mother has never been a homebody. You couldn't keep her in the house for 2 or 3 days. But now she's in a place where that is her reality. I don't think so much because that's what she wants, but just the physical limitations she has to deal with. And so I have seen a distinct change in her over that period of time. My mother refused to go gray for a really, really long time. And I guess it was Thanksgiving, my husband and I went down to visit and her hair was totally white. Like she had just decided she wasn't going to dye it anymore and it was completely white. And it took the breath out of me because I was really not prepared for that at all. And it makes you stop. And I think most people think about their own mortality. It just made me think of, oh, okay, there's going to come a day when she's not here. And I know that consciously, mentally, emotionally, I know all that stuff. But when you're just sort of confronted with it in a moment where you really can't react to it that much, it just puts you in a different headspace. So I really wanted this party to be her, I don't know what you want to call it, last hurrah or swan song or however we want to look at it, and to have her siblings opt not to participate, frankly, pissed me the hell off, if I'm going to be honest about it. And I had a nice rant on Facebook about it because I am friends with a lot of these people. And I made my feelings really clear. And I'm not going to bring it up again. If one of them wants to bring it up with me, that's fine. But I've said my piece about it. But what I've had to really wrestle with and accept in the couple of weeks since the party is that they're having the same difficulties and challenges with aging that my mother has had and is having. She's the oldest. None of them has been as old as she is. And it's likely that her journey and watching what she has gone through in terms of her health challenges has left them, I don't want to say stunned, but sort of like, oh, this could be my future. This could be what my life moves into, whether that's what I want it to be or not. And that has to be daunting and upsetting and frustrating because, as I said, time comes for all of us. Time waits for no one. And we all just have to be super aware of that. So that is what I wanted to share this week. We are now in the 20s of our episodes. Hard to believe, but here we are. I want to thank everybody for joining me this week. You can catch this podcast on YouTube. So if you go in and type in youtube.com in the search engine, type in Brick City Brown Chick, and you'll get a cute little avatar of me with a big, huge afro on my head with words in it that describe who I am. So that's how you can get to all now 21 episodes of this podcast. Thank you, everyone, for joining me this week, and I look forward to seeing you again. Bye-bye.